trip back to Victoria for all those in navy blue.
It's been a while, but welcome to another edition of A Footballer's Life. Sorry about the delay, been a bit busy with other things going on, but we're back to hearing some footballers' tales about their career, their life, and players from the Hyundai A-League. Today's guest is Ben Halloran, the Adelaide United flyer who started in the A-League and then went overseas. And he's a bit different, Ben, in the sense that he's got a really open mind, not just about football, but about life as well, and some of the experiences that he wants to take in while he's doing what he's doing. Please enjoy the chat. A Footballer's Life with Ben Halloran.
To get past Hinkett, but he was on the seat of his pants and Goodwin's away. The comeback, Halloran, had to be against his old club. The first goal in Reds colours for Ben Halloran, and it comes against the outfit he left 5 years ago to launch his overseas career. And that goal has been coming.
Ben, thanks for your time. Much appreciated. How's life in Adelaide before we go back? We'll talk about the present a little bit. How's things?
Yeah, enjoying it. Adelaide's a great city. Been here since the start of August, so I came a bit later. But yeah, really can't complain. Really ticks all the boxes for me.
Yeah. Where are you from originally? Cairns, was it? You were born?
Yeah, born in Cairns. Yeah. And moved to Brisbane when I was about 5 or 6 and grew up there.
Grew up in Brisbane. Yeah. And then Gold Coast, you ended up with your first professional contract. But in Brisbane, is that where you played your first football?
Yeah. I played for a club called Wynnum Wolves. Mm. And they changed their name to Brisbane Wolves. Played there for like 10 or so years. Went to the academy there and then moved to the Gold Coast.
What drew you to football? Who drew you to football?
I think I was just a bundle of energy when I was a kid, like a lot of footballers say. So when I was about 5 living in Cairns, my old man, he was a mad Aussie Rules fan, so he enrolled me in Auskick on the holidays and I just didn't rate it. I think I had no friends there or something, so I said all my mates are playing across the road playing footy, so went across the road and since then I just loved it.
Did your dad come to the realisation quick that it was your decision and you trying to live your own life, or he didn't try and make you do a U-turn?
Not at all. He just wanted me to... He was happy that I was playing sport and he was my biggest mentor growing up as well.
Was he quick as well? Where did you get your speed from?
Definitely not from my mum, so I'm guessing from my old man.
Yeah. Was he an Aussie Rules player? What's his background in sport?
So the whole Halloran side of the family is from Kangaroo Island. Mm. Do you know Kangaroo Island?
I've never been, but I've heard of it.
So he grew up playing Aussie Rules, just played like kind of local league around Adelaide, never really cracked the professional level, but he played it at a fairly high level.
That's kind of in keeping with your career a bit, which we'll get to. It's a little nomadic going from Kangaroo Island to Cairns.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
I don't know exactly. I think my mum and my dad, they met in Brisbane. My dad, well, I guess that's where I get the nomadic side. He kind of bounced around a fair bit, so they met in Brisbane just by chance. And they moved up to Cairns, I think, for my old man's work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful love story.
Yeah, right.
So Brisbane, growing up in Brisbane, as a little tacker who loves his football in a rugby league town, what's that like?
I was fortunate because it can be just a mixed bag when you play at a club level when you're growing up, and I was just lucky to have really passionate coaches. Who were just volunteers as well. Mm. And we had I kind of just always played with my mates. I was just fortunate to play with the same group from like 6 years old till I went to the academy. So I never really thought too far ahead. I was just happy playing with my mates.
The academy being Queensland?
Academy of Sport, yeah.
Academy of Sport. How do you get selected for something like that? How did that come about?
When I was young, there was no real clear pathway.
Mm. What years are we talking here? We're talking
this would have been
early
like
2000s?
Yeah, I probably would have gone to the QAS when I was about 13, 14. So it would have been 2007, maybe? 2006, 2007?
God, I feel old.
Don't worry, I feel old as well these days. Back in the days, like, you're born 92, that's young. And now people are born, like, 2000, 2001. It's
congratulations, by the way. It's our first 2 beeps on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking that.
Well, it's the first time for everything. It's the second time for everything as well. And you did both. Well done.
Yeah, I'll try and keep a bit more PG.
If you want. I mean, I can go ballistic with the beeps if you want.
Yeah, okay.
People might think that Ben Halloran's hero is Rodney Roode. I don't know. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But, yeah, there was no clear pathway. It was a bit of a mess, was it? And that's probably in the crossover of the early A-League days, and the NSL clubs have been kicked to the curb, and the A-League clubs are just worried about the first team and not so worried about the youth, which is what we're kind of feeling now a little bit in football, that the byproduct of that. Do you reckon that's fair enough?
Yeah, I think these days it is a bit more clear. Like when I was that age, there was no professional football in Australia. Mm. You know, so, and like, for instance, I think the biggest team in Brisbane would have been like the Brisbane Strikers, but as a young fella, I didn't have aspirations to play for the Brisbane Strikers because that wasn't technically professional. Whereas I think these days, players do have, you know, that goal in mind to play for an A-League club.
Yeah.
You know? Yes, I think I was like 13, 14, and then I'd never heard of the QAS because I kind of just played it for fun.
Yeah.
And I just all heard all my, like, kind of all the best players were going to this thing called the QAS, and I asked my old man, and he's like, I have no idea what it is. So he just made a couple of phone calls, and I went in and just, they're like, yeah, you can come in and just trial for a couple of weeks. So I just went in, trialed, and then they selected me for it.
Sweet.
But it was pretty fortuitous. If he hadn't made a phone call, then it may never have happened. And,
Yeah. You
know, I'm sure that happens with a lot of players, you know.
That is the thing, your sliding doors moment, your luck. Who was there? Was Mike Mulvey there when you were there?
Yeah, Mike. I don't remember the coach when I first went, but after about a year or so, Mike Mulvey took over.
Yeah.
I was about 14, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How was he for you? Or was it the environment and the fact that some of the other kids there were good and you pushed each other along?
It was pretty interesting. I have a fairly checkered history with Mike. We get along really well, but when I was 15, I think after 6 months, kind of saddled the players down and said he needed to cut a few players.
Hmm.
I think we had a group of, I don't know, 20, 30.
Yeah.
Just making a bit of brekkie. And he told me and one other player to go back to club level. Wasn't really good enough.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And obviously I was distraught. Probably not so much so that I wasn't going to become a professional. It was just like showing up to school the next day and saying, fuck, I'm not in the QAS. That's another swear word. Because at that age, that's like so important.
Yeah.
You know. But I think it was a bit of a turning point as well, because I think when I was at the QAS, even at such a young age, I was kind of there for the wrong reasons. I was just kind of like, I was there because I wanted to tell other people that I was part of the QAS. And
there for the sake of being there.
Yeah, I wasn't really enjoying it. And then when I went back to club level, I just started enjoying it again. And 6 months later, got selected for it again and kind of took off from there.
What were the problems that Mike had with you then in terms of telling you, beat it?
Just not good enough, really. He said I had potential, but I just wasn't really fulfilling it. And there were other players that were better than me. He said it's pretty black and white.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I think it was fair enough. I just wasn't really playing with any confidence.
Yeah.
You know, so he was like, go back and start enjoying it and come back when you want to, you know, when I can see that you're enjoying it again.
And did you go back?
Yeah, I did. 6 months later, we had like a national tournament where I played for the state team, and then he selected me again, and then
yeah, all buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
Where to after that? What happened after that?
Played in the state league with QAS for a couple of years, and then when the Gold Coast formed, the whole kind of academy kind of split into two. Half went to the Roar, and half went to the Gold Coast.
Yep.
And Mike went to the Gold Coast and asked me to go there, and I was pretty happy to join him.
You had a pretty hot team, didn't you? The youth team at Gold Coast.
Yeah, unbelievable. We had Joshy Belante, Chrissy Harold, Daniel Bowles, Zach Anderson, Mitchie Cooper.
Hmm.
It's pretty solid team.
I think Clive turned it into the first team before too long.
He did. Poor Mitchie Cooper. Oh, I still remember that.
I'll get to that. Yeah. I want to get to that. But how was it moving from Brisbane to Gold Coast, or did you stay in Brisbane and commute and
nothing really changed? Moved to the Gold Coast. Parents moved down with me.
Oh yeah. That's a big call.
Yeah, gave up a fair bit so I could, you know, take up that opportunity.
Yeah.
But it was still fairly tough because I was still going to school in Brizzy, so, you know, I'd get up, drive my mum to work because we only had the one car, drive back, drive to the train station, catch a train to school, and I'd always have to leave like 2 hours early to get back to the Gold Coast for training.
What was school to you?
I enjoyed it. I never really knew what I wanted to do, but I always made sure that I maintained fairly good grades just in case.
Yeah.
You know, football didn't work out. But, yeah, it was all right.
Were you brainy, or would you have made it in some particular field if it wasn't football?
Definitely not. Science and maths was something that I just never really got a grip on. But I always enjoyed, like, English and the humanities types of subjects.
Creativity. Yeah. Open-mindedness.
Yeah, perhaps.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because you're wearing sandals.
Yeah. I fool a lot of people with that.
As we sit here at an Adelaide recovery session, you've rocked in sandals. You've said that you're the only bloke in the team that can get away with it.
Yeah.
Or can wear them, apart from the coach, Marco Kurtz.
Exactly.
Living up to his German heritage.
Exactly. Right. That's why he picks me. I wear the same shoes as him.
How was Gold Coast? Because obviously it turned into something quite, let's say, unique. Clive Palmer decided to do what he wanted to do with the club, which was basically to not spend much money and give youth a chance because that was his only alternative.
Mm.
How was that experience for a young player?
Yeah, unique, as you would say, putting it diplomatically. When I first arrived, it was the glamour club. We had private jets going to the games. We had pretty much everything.
Did you ever get on the jet?
I didn't, unfortunately. I was still with the youth team. And I think Clive's a businessman. He's a great guy, pretty eccentric, him and Miron together. But I think when he realised that he was just losing a lot of money with the club, he just started to cut corners.
Yeah.
You know, he probably maybe got into it not thinking that, as I said, because he's a businessman.
Yeah.
And then I think as soon as he started to cut corners, that's when the club started to fall apart a bit.
Yeah, because you had a really good first A-League season and also the Youth League, I think, won.
Yeah, it went back to
won the grand final.
Yeah.
I remember I was there at one of them against Melbourne Victory and looked at the side and went, wow, there's so much talent here. So tell us the story of when Clive completely melted down and he marches in, and was it an eeny, meeny, miny, mo type thing and he chose Mitch Cooper to be the captain? Were there others in contention, or that famous week where he just had a complete meltdown and falling out with Miron, who eventually walked away not soon after?
Yeah.
What happened there?
It was kind of all behind closed doors. He didn't really come into the change room or anything. I think he was a man of grand gestures. I think he just wanted to make a statement. So Mitchie Cooper was the unfortunate one. He was the youngest one, hadn't played a game. So he had this newfound philosophy that he came up with overnight that he just wanted to promote the young players. And that's all well and good, but you can't just throw a 17-year-old who's never played in the mix and make him captain. It doesn't really work like that. That's not necessarily just promoting young players, you know.
That's just being a goose.
Yeah.
I'll say it. You don't have to say it. Were you in the mix then? What was going on with your football right then? And how were you affected in any way with all these issues?
I mean, I was kind of... for me, in retrospect, I was kind of lucky, you know, because that kind of gave me the opportunity. A lot of high-profile players left. You know, he did want to play young players, and that's how I kind of got my foot in the door at quite a young age, so... I was playing most weeks, but it was kind of odd. That was my first professional club, and there was always rumours that the club was going to fold.
Hmm.
You know, it wasn't going to be around, you know, in a couple of months. So that was definitely strange.
Does that make you think about the path you've chosen a little bit? You're thinking on the run, okay, I might need a backup plan here. Or no, because football's so big, you figured that you'd be able to find somewhere.
I think it was probably more difficult for other players who'd kind of set up their lives, their older players. For me, because I did have a bit of a breakout season, if anything, it worked in my favour.
Yeah.
You know, once the club folded, I had a fair few opportunities, you know, still within the A-League. But for older players like Michael Thwaite or something, who kind of gave everything to the club, set up a life there, you know, for the club just to fold at the drop of a hat was pretty tough, I think.
Do you remember the day when everyone pulled a pin?
Yeah, I remember pretty clearly. We were sitting there, our local cafe, and then it just filtered through on Twitter or something. They're like, all right, the club's done. And we were just kind of sitting there, just bewildered, like four or five of us, like, what are we going to do?
What did you do?
I just spoke to, called my agent, and he said, yeah, just sit tight, there'll be opportunities. Yeah.
What were the opportunities? What were the chance? You ended up in Brisbane, obviously, but where could you have gone, and do you regret where you went?
No, not at all. It was kind of between Brisbane, Newcastle and Melbourne Victory.
Mm.
And I chose Brisbane just because it was the best club at the time. And also it was where I was from, so it was great just to move back there.
Yeah. No regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets.
No.
So you have it, was it one season there? Or?
Yeah, one season.
One season. And then how does Ben Halloran end up in Germany?
How did that happen? So I was playing there, I was happy as Larry. For me, it was a dream. I moved back in with my high school mates. I was playing for the playing for the Roar, so that was one of the best years of my life.
Off the park?
Off the park.
Yeah. You enjoyed yourself.
I enjoyed myself, put it that way. And then John Grimaud, my agent, just called me kind of midway through the season, said, look, this club from Germany is interested in you, Fortuna Düsseldorf. And I was kind of just a bit nonplussed. I was like, oh, that's cool. But, yeah. You know, just let me know if there's anything. And then we played a game in Newcastle, I think, and a scout flew out from Germany to watch the game.
Yeah.
I was put on the bench. I think I played about a minute at the end. So I kind of thought, oh, that's over then. Caught up with the scout the next morning, just had a chat with him. Kind of thought, yeah, that, you know, that opportunity's passed, but I was still pretty happy to be living and playing in Brisbane. And then the off-season rolled around, and then just like that, I got a phone call, and John said, the opportunity's there, the contract's been sent through. If you want to go to Germany, then, you know, the contract's there.
For those uninitiated, for the 99.9% of footballers who play at any level who've never been scouted, what's that like? Do you know before the game that a scout's in the stands?
Yeah, I think if they're going to fly...
You?
Yeah. If they're going to fly from all the way from Germany, then...
You find out.
You find out, yeah.
So how do you deal with that? And then especially how do you deal with it when you end up playing a minute of the game that said scout is watching? To take us through the mentality and what you have to deal with there, because it's you've got something dangling in front of you, but you've got to actually be able to play.
Yeah, it was definitely...
Prove
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah, it was frustrating. I mean, the ball wasn't in my court, so I kind of just... Yeah, put it behind me and said, well, it was the coach's decision for whatever reason. If Mike didn't play me because he wanted to prevent an opportunity or he just thought I wasn't good enough to play on that particular day, I don't really know. But yeah, I caught up with the scout the next day, explained the situation, you know, and then, you know, my agent really just pushed for it. I think I was quite fortunate because Robbie Cruz was also at Fortuna and he had an unbelievable season.
Yeah.
You know, we played a similar position and he was going to leave to a bigger club and then there was that spot free. So I think having Robbie kind of pioneer that, you know, that spot made it much easier for the scout to have faith in my agent because my agent really just said, look, just take him. He's good enough, even if you haven't seen him. So I think, you know, based on that, that's how I got over there.
Because every footballer's ambitious. So is it fair to say you've got to contain your ambition sometimes, not to let it get ahead of yourself or let it swirl inside that you're getting over the top and you overthink things and you start putting pressure on yourself and all of those things? Is it a hard thing to contain your ambition as a footballer? Given that it's a team sport, you're an individual in that sport.
For sure. I mean, for me personally, it's not that I'm not ambitious, but I've always kind of looked at football differently. Like when I first found out that I was going to move to Düsseldorf, I think one of the last things I looked at was the team. You know, I looked at where to live in Düsseldorf, you know, where I could travel to. I kind of looked at it more as a life opportunity, not just football. And I think that's kind of made it easier for me, especially when I first moved over and it wasn't going too well at the start. I was just buzzing that I could drive 2 hours and I'd be in Belgium or Holland. Or for me, like the novelty of it was, you know, more exciting than the football side of things initially.
Yeah.
I think that can be tough for some players that are very ambitious and they just don't get that opportunity. And football's such a mental game. You know, it can really weigh you down if you don't get like a lucky break.
That's not to say that you rock up wearing flower power t-shirts, tie-dye t-shirts with, you know, flowers in your hair and not caring about life.
No,
you do
all.
Care about your football.
Yeah, of course.
You just look at it a different way.
Yeah.
Who taught you that? Yourself or someone?
I don't know. Probably my parents have a massive part in that. They kind of never pushed me in any direction, but they were always my number one support. Mm. You know, they always just said, just do what you love.
Yeah.
You know, so I think probably comes from them.
So travel's your love. You could have ended up a travel guide or something like that if...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what I'll transition into. I don't know. But I think especially moving to Europe, I got itchy feet, so...
Yeah.
Every time I get a couple of days off or something, I love traveling around.
Scram, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to us first. We'll get to what you've seen and some of the great places you've got to experience, which is the envy of a lot of 20-year-olds or 20-somethings, I'd say, in Australia, because they have to go over there and live out of the arse of their pants and eat two-minute noodles. You're over there with a professional football contract and getting to do the same, not to the extent of what they do, obviously, but the football, the first 6 months, the transition to an environment like that, how was that for you?
Yeah, pretty full on. I mean, when I first went there, I was in pretty poor condition, come off the back of like a 6-week off-season in Brisbane. I knew I was leaving, so kind of let my hair down.
Fortitude Valley.
Yeah, exactly. And then arrived on the first day. I think it was my 21st birthday that I had my first training session.
Did they sing happy birthday? Or no one gave a shit?
I can't remember. I think it was all business, to be fair. And I remember just going in, and I think it didn't really occur to me that I knew I was moving to Germany. For some reason, it didn't really occur to me that everyone's going to be speaking German. And then I walked in, and then the coach started speaking. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. It's like, oh, man, like, this is really happening. And then we did a fitness test, and I think I was the least fit in the whole team, even behind the goalkeepers.
Oh, dear.
So I think the first few months was really just getting me fit.
So you didn't kick a ball competitively for a while? Or were you playing second team stuff?
I was playing with the second team.
Yeah.
And then again, I got a fairly lucky break. There were a few injuries. The team wasn't doing too well. And then got a start, actually fairly early on, considering I was a new young player, probably about 2-3 months into the season. Got a lucky break, started, kind of cemented my spot because the team started winning. And then from there, played fairly consistently that season.
What's the thing that we might not know about that kind of environment, say Germany? Ultra serious, very professional. It's a physical league. People don't realise how physical it is, perhaps. What's something that perhaps we might not be able to comprehend that you experienced
I think just how cutthroat it is over there. Like, with the relegation and promotion, it's just so full on.
Yeah.
You know, like, if the team's not doing well, you know, it's laid out pretty clearly that, look, if you get relegated, you're going to lose your contract. You're going to get half of what you're earning. You're going to get sacked. So it's very, like, to hear that very early on, it's pretty confronting. Like, oh, man, like, I've got a 3-year contract. If I get relegated, like, I'm going to be playing semi-professionally and be earning a third of what I get now.
Yeah. So that's in your contract, is it? They can just do
that? Yeah, yeah. So it's just very cutthroat and ultra competitive. Whereas here, it's still very competitive, but there's really not as much on the line.
Yeah.
If you finish last, we finish first, you're going to earn the same amount of money. But over there, it's just so competitive.
Yeah, it's what we need.
Yeah, I think so.
Does it bring out the best and worst in people in some respects as well? Did you see some things from coaches or people around the club that you go, man, you've gone completely overboard? Conversely, did you get a lot out of it in terms of competitive instinct?
Yeah, it's definitely fun to be a part of when things are going well. It's just very black and white, especially Dusseldorf. It's a massive traditional club. So it's typical if you win on a Friday, you rock up to training the next day, could be completely hungover. Recovery would be just to ride to the bakery and get a couple of donuts and then just have the weekend off. Whereas conversely, if you lose, you'll be 2 times on the paddock the next day and they'll just belt you.
Even if you play well and lose, as opposed to playing bad and winning, which can happen in football.
Yeah, you just got to win. If you win, then everything's sweet. You don't analyse it or anything.
What were some of those recovery sessions like when you lost? You said you get belted, so you're out in the pitch running like a madman.
Yeah, it's not as full on as that, but I remember one time we had my first coach, because I had like 6 coaches in 2 seasons when I was at Fortuna. It was a shambles.
It's cutthroat.
Yeah, exactly. And then we lost at home like 6-1 or something, but I was with the youth team, so I wasn't involved. And he's like, okay, everyone needs to be at training tomorrow. And he just said, all right, put on your runners and run around the pitch until I tell you to stop. And you'd think we were running for like half an hour, and then he just kept telling us, yep, another one. And we ran for like well over 2 hours, just at a slow tempo, but I think it was just, he just wanted to get inside our heads. And then after that, he got sacked.
After that?
Yeah, I think he might have known he was going to get sacked, so he just...
Oh, it's a parting gift.
Yeah, one last chance to take it out on the players.
Yeah. Oh, dear. How did it come to pass that you end up in Brazil with the World Cup squad? What do you reckon got you there on the plane?
I think the last 6 games of the season, I managed to score 5 goals. So I think that kind of sealed it for me. Yeah.
How do you find out something like that, that you're in contention, that there's a possibility of going, that you have to let family and friends know that you're going if they want to come as well, because there's a big family tour group that go. It's a big thing.
Yeah, massive. I kind of just, it all happened very, very quickly. It wasn't really even on my radar because I hadn't been involved beforehand. I got called up early, I think midway in the season. We had a camp, but I had a small injury, so I couldn't go. And then I knew that I was on the radar, and then when I started playing well and scoring goals, I had the feeling I was going to get picked. But it's still that thing. They pick 30 players and only 23 go, and that's just, oh, the stress involved in those few weeks leading up is just so intense.
Yeah.
You know, especially for the players, because they cut it down to 27, and then 27 went to Brazil. And then on the camp, another four players get cut a day before the first game.
Yeah.
Which is just, oh, it's heartbreaking. I remember Mile Jedinak went around and kind of informed all the players. Everyone just kind of went back to their individual rooms and he walked around and kind of...
The knock of death.
Yeah.
From Mile.
Yeah. So I just, yeah, it was heartbreaking for the players that didn't...
What did he tell you when he knocked on your door?
I can't remember exactly. But just that...
You're in.
You're
close the door.
Yeah.
The next one.
Exactly.
Pretty businesslike.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Rogic, Josh Kennedy went down as well, injured late, so heartbreak for them. How did you... Touching on what you mentioned before about you like the open-mindedness of the world, you're worldly, put it that way. But then a World Cup, and especially the way Ange Postecoglou set it up in Brazil, you were like in this castle of a hotel and you couldn't leave. Mm-hmm. And you were confined there and everything. Every time you blinked, you had security forces with you. The Brazilians were so worried about it. How'd you deal with that? Did you actually enjoy the World Cup?
It was a bit odd. We were really just like quarantined. Like, we couldn't really watch the games as much because we were preparing ourselves. We were roomed individually, which I think was good given the amount of time we were there. But yeah, as a football fan, I would have loved to have, you kind of had this idea that you'd be, you know, in this athlete's village, like at the Olympics, but it wasn't like that at all.
No.
You know, we were quite removed from that. So it was only really afterwards, it was unfortunate that we got knocked out. It was kind of nice to actually, especially after all the stress of being involved, it was kind of nice just to enjoy it as a fan again afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. You were in Rio after it. And can I say that we enjoyed ourselves? We got to go to favelas and experience the Brazilian culture and proper Brazilian food and proper Brazilian lifestyle.
Mm.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right. I got to enjoy a little bit of it.
You got your own back after it. How was that in terms of an eye-opener football-wise with things, how professional, and tried to make it as professional as possible? What was that like being involved in the national team setup as opposed to a club setup?
Yeah, no, that was great. Ange is such a great man motivator and he knows what he's doing. I think he's one of the only coaches when he would give a speech before a game, you'd really buy into it and you'd be willing to run through a glass window for him.
There were some beauties?
Yeah, definitely. And
do you remember any of them?
Not off the...
Off the cuff?
Not off the cuff, but he could really, you know, instill that passion and inspiration in the players, which was so important.
Mm.
And the way he played, he was very daring and always wanted us to play out, which I think is what a player wants to hear. You don't want to hear like, hey, we're on the world stage, we've got to, you know, park the bus here.
Yeah.
You know, so he kind of gave the players, he instilled the confidence in the players that we were good enough to beat the likes of Chile, Spain and Holland. We didn't in the end, but I think we, especially against Holland and Chile, we pushed them all the way.
When you're out there in a World Cup game, does it feel like a normal game of football when you're actually playing?
Yeah, it feels exactly like any other game when you're actually out there. I think because you're just so focused. You know, it's only afterwards that you're like, man, just played against like Alexis Sanchez, that's crazy.
Mm.
You know, but I think in the game, you just, especially that level, you're just so focused that you don't have time to admire Robin on the other side of the pitch, you know, when you're receiving a ball.
Do you get many pats on the back from your club after you go back and you've played in a World Cup and you've experienced that, or do they just not even pay much attention to it? You have to get on with your job.
Nah, definitely. Fortuna followed it all the way, and it's a massive thing, especially amongst players as well. Not that many players get to go to a World Cup, so
yeah,
there's definitely a lot of respect there, I think, for anyone who's gone to a World Cup.
Describe your club career in the years after the World Cup.
So I went back to Dusseldorf. For me, I don't know, maybe I went back a little jaded, if anything. It was such a high, such an unexpected high, and maybe I went back a little complacent, forgot how competitive and cutthroat it was in Dusseldorf. I kind of cemented my spot out of status there, but maybe I got a bit complacent, and then that season was a bit frustrating. I was kind of in and out. Wasn't playing as much as the first season, maybe didn't take that next step that I needed to, that was maybe expected of me.
Yeah.
And I think I got a bit, developed a few habits of going out a bit too much maybe. You got a bit too comfortable there.
Started speaking German and so you know exactly what's going on everywhere.
Yeah. And then I kind of just made the decision that I needed a change of scenery just to mix it up. I needed a new challenge. So I just said to my agent, anywhere else in the second league would be great.
Mm.
And that's why I moved to Heidenheim.
How was that? What's Heidenheim like? Never really heard of it. I know of Hoffenheim. I don't know much of Heidenheim.
Pretty similar. It's a tiny little industrial city in the south. I moved there for the football, not for the lifestyle.
South of Germany's nice, though.
I got lucky. I didn't end up living in Heidenheim. I lived in a student city about 45 minutes away. I was like the only player in the end. That was a very, very old school club.
Yeah.
I think I was the only foreigner there when I arrived, which was great because I think that's it when I actually kind of learned to speak German. You know, because I learned to speak it in Dusseldorf, but everyone just spoke English. And this was the club I went to, and the expectation was you have to speak German.
Mm.
And that's the best way to learn a language, when you're just forced into it.
Yeah.
It was kind of the type of club where all the staff were ex-players. The coach had been there for 10 years.
Mm.
It had been the same for a very long period of time, which is very different to somewhere in Dusseldorf where they didn't really have a clear identity. Every 6 months, it was a new philosophy, a new coach, a new idea. But it was cool because it was a stark contrast from where I was playing beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a look at your, and getting back to the travel aspect of things, that you would have enjoyed being in Germany still and having everything on your doorstep there. Having a look at your Instagram, I don't know if that's a realistic look into someone's life, but your last 9 picks, there's one of football and the rest are of landscapes. There's one of, I presume it's your partner.
Yeah.
But there's 7 others of beautiful landscapes and, you know, nature, if you like, and your travels. So you got around a bit when you were in Europe. What were some of the places that you got to see and experience and love?
Well, when we moved to, because I met my girlfriend in Dusseldorf, and we moved about 2 months later, so it all happened pretty quickly.
So she's German?
She's German, yeah.
That would have helped you German as well?
Yeah, but she speaks impeccable English.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I learned, speaking to her grandparents helps that I can speak a bit. And when we moved to the south, you just have so many amazing hiking options just at your doorstep. So every free weekend we would, you know, pack the car, get the hiking boots, and we would just head into the mountains.
Really?
And I think that's where I was always interested in nature, and I was pretty outdoorsy, but it's breathtaking there.
Yeah.
You could drive an hour and you're in like the Austrian Alps, you know, and it's just, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. So your idea of a great weekend is, as a footballer, is not sitting down to watch a heap of football and then when there's no football on, playing FIFA?
No, not at all. It's just about getting out, getting in the fresh air and exploring something.
Do you need that for your head?
Definitely,
as a footballer?
Definitely. And I think that was maybe a bit misunderstood when I was living in Germany, because most of the players were from Heidenheim, this very small town. So when they had a weekend off, they wouldn't really do much. They'd watch football.
Hmm.
Whereas, you know, I'd go on a 7-hour hike in the mountains, you know, and then the coach would say, like, what are you doing? You know, you need to rest. You need to... He didn't travel much. So when I would, like, you know, go hiking or fly to, I don't know, Dublin for a weekend or something.
Yeah.
It's not like I'd be going there to have a piss up or anything. It's just I really enjoyed traveling. And for me, that was a way to clear my head. And I think maybe they just didn't really understand that.
Give us a place that we might not know about in Europe that we should visit and maybe ruin the allure of it being out of the way.
I think the Lofoten Islands in the northern part of Norway.
Oh, really?
That is just beautiful. I went there in the middle of, in summer.
Yeah.
And because it's just above the Arctic Circle, so the sun just doesn't set, like, at all. So, like, well, I remember we were there for a week, and our body clocks after 2 days were just so messed up. We were hiking at, like, 2 a.m. and eating breakfast at midnight. It was just... But it's beautiful there. It's just, like, this archipelago of islands.
Yeah.
It's almost otherworldly. Like, you've got, like... it's like you've got, like, Mediterranean beaches right next to snow-capped mountains. And it's just... And it's Norway as well, so you've got, like, futuristic roads, you know, just weaving in and out of them. So it's just so accessible as well.
Don't go there in winter, though, I'm presuming.
Unless you want to see the Northern Lights.
Okay,
which would be pretty cool.
Which you can from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll keep it in mind. You never made a football decision based on what would be easy to explore the world?
No, I don't think so. And sometimes I think maybe I'm a bit, I come across or... In my own head, I'm a bit blasé about football, but every decision I've made, it was for football. I left Dusseldorf for a new challenge and to get out of my comfort zone. And that's why I left Heidenheim to go to Japan.
Yeah.
Because I thought I could have left Heidenheim and gone to, I don't know, a much easier league.
Norway.
Yeah, I could have gone and lived in Norway, maybe just for the summer. But I moved to Japan for the challenge.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think I've ever made a move just to... for the lifestyle or anything like that. It was always kind of football was first.
Read some comments that you said in the paper about Nagasaki, where you ended up. You sounded like you didn't really enjoy it there. Is that fair? That you didn't overly become enamoured with the place?
Yeah, I think now that in retrospect, there's a bit of distance between when I left the club and now. It was an unbelievable experience.
Yeah.
But I think day to day it just got a little tough. I think I underestimated how foreign it was going to be.
Mm.
You know, like waking up and thinking, man, this is my life now. I'm living in this little country town.
You didn't like in Germany get into the dressing room in Japan and go, oh, wow, they're all speaking Japanese.
I did, but the Japanese, they're just... Well, where I was playing, no one spoke a word of English.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just very odd having a translator as well. It's,
yeah.
You know, it was an amazing place to live for a while, but I think by the end of it, I wasn't playing too much and I was just really missing friends and family. It was tough for my missus as well, and it kind of just didn't make sense towards the end.
How much of a grind is that then? You wake up every day and you go, here we go again. I'm not like that's. It's a hard thing to get through life when you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, no, it definitely took its toll. I think that's, like, I just got to the point, honestly, where we had the mid-season break. I wasn't really involved much, and the club said, if Ben wants to find other options, he's free to go. Otherwise, he can stay. But we just don't really see him playing that much.
What, they spoke to you in third person, did they?
I heard this through translator and to my agent and back to me. It's very odd. You don't really have any actual relationship with your teammates or your coach, which is, I found, really tough.
Okay.
Because it's all through your translator, but so much gets lost in translation.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have just a casual chat before training, you know.
So it sounded good. The going to live and play in Japan sounded good, but the reality was a little different for you.
Yeah, because I was so interested in Japanese culture, but it was just so tough to actually talk to Japanese people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially where I was living, because it wasn't Tokyo. It wasn't that international. Yeah, so I think I just found that frustrating. And then when the club said, you can find another club, then I just spoke to my missus, and the next day we decided that we were just going to take a break.
Yeah.
You know, I left the club a few days later. The Japanese people, can't speak highly enough of Japanese people. Like, they were so apologetic.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, we're not trying to push you away or anything. And I'm like, no, I understand, but I think it's best for both of us. And, you know, they helped me pack up everything, you know, paid an extra month's salary, made sure that everything was fine.
Oh, really?
You know, they're just...
As opposed to, say, Europe, where it's beat it, get
out. They're like, oh, perfect, just get rid of him.
Get
you know?
Lost.
Yeah, nice as people. And then we flew back to Germany to visit Helen's family, my girlfriend, and then I just wanted to take a break. I thought for me personally, I'd moved around so much had happened, I just needed to take a step back from it all, get a bit of perspective. And we always wanted to travel.
Yeah.
You know, for extended period of time where it wasn't just so restricted.
Yeah.
And I just said to my agent, look, just give me 6 weeks. Don't call me about any opportunity, any offer from the A-League or anything, and then I'll let you know where I stand. And then we traveled around for a bit and loved it.
Mm.
But I realized fairly quickly that I was keen to get back into it and that Australia was the best option.
Yeah, what's your age now?
26.
26, yeah. So you still got at least 6-7 years left of a football career. You may as well make the most of it and then fund your lifestyle for
exactly.
When you retire. Is that the aim? What do you want to do when you finally
yet.
See every continent or go to every country in the world or fill your passport 7 times? What's the go?
I don't know. I'm sure that won't be my life's work. I'm not sure. I think having played abroad, I realised how little support there is for players when they're kind of going through tough times.
Yeah.
Because here in Australia, the PFA is great.
Yep.
There really are a lot of ways that they help the players. But when you're abroad, you are kind of just, you know, left to your own devices. Mm. And I could think it's incredibly tough for some players going abroad by themselves, doesn't work out, you know, and then there's just no support there. They have no friends or family, they don't speak the language.
Mm.
So maybe transitioning to some sort of support role could be something I'd be interested in.
Too easy. Well, the football's going okay. You're enjoying things here in Adelaide. There's plenty of places to see around Adelaide as well. You like your wineries, or you're not that kind of guy?
More of a beer man. But Yeah, keen to check out the wineries as well. Yeah, Adelaide's great. You've got the beach, 15 minutes away, you've got the hills just around the corner.
It's not really a beach, it's like a bay with a bit of water.
Have you been down the coast a little bit though?
Yeah, but they've got great white sharks down there, so
yeah.
I wouldn't jump in.
It's pretty though.
We've got sharks in Sydney as well, but yeah, it's a good place, and you feel completely comfortable here in terms of allowing how comfortable you are away to get the best out of yourself as a footballer. There's an equation there.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've always noticed a correlation between my football on the pitch and my peace of mind oft. If I was kind of comfortable and off the pitch, then that reflects on the pitch, and I think I can say that's how I feel at the moment here.
Well, Benny, fascinating chat. You're a different footballer. It's good to get that story out there, and it was really good listening to it, and well done on getting through the last 35 minutes of the podcast and dropping no F-bombs as opposed to the three in the first five. So thanks for your time, mate.
No worries.